it'd be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm ballin', I'm stuntin'. Be too easy chasing the fame, playing the game, it'll be too easy. But tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey everybody, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and as always, I am here with my co-host, Kent Straith. Say hello, Kent.
Hello, Calvin.
What's up? I'm kidding, I don't care.
Okay.
As always, we like to hit on some heart-hitting issues. Hopefully you guys liked last week's episode where we talked about police brutality, community re-engagement amidst public protest. This week, our topic is no less dicey. We're going to be talking about interracial relationships, and we've got a really nice, diverse panel in here today with diverse backgrounds, diverse stories, diverse perspectives. And so we're just going to kind of go around the table. We've got four panelists this week with us, a couple who were with us last week, and then two new people as well. So we'll start off with Gregoire. Reintroduce yourself to our listeners.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gregoire Eugene Lewis. I'm a Haitian American, I believe so. I was
this week,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So if you don't know about Haiti, first, you know, we're the first Black free country in the world, and then they changed us to Black Hispanics, and now we just joined Pan Africa. So now I'm a Haitian African American now.
Not to jump back 500 years, but is that where Christopher Columbus landed? Haiti. Anybody?
Yes.
Yes.
That's where he landed.
Okay.
All right. He's still... Never mind. Not even going to go into the history lesson. Anytime somebody brings up something historical, I'm like, and I can tell you... No. So, who's from about Calvin? And next we have with us Hannah McPeak. Hannah, introduce yourself. What's up?
Hello. I am Hannah McPeak, and I am Korean. And I don't have any really cool historical tips or any interesting stories, so...
Okay.
Seoul is the home of the 1988 Summer Olympics.
Yes, what? It is.
Oh, it's rather funny. Recent history, but I thought I'd jump in.
There you go.
Was Michael Perfect. Phelps in that?
Was
Michael Phelps swimming
nope.
then?
No. Well, nope. Probably.
Probably.
But not in the Olympics.
In an amniotic sack.
There was something wrong.
It was an amniotic sack that was he was swimming in at that point. And next we have Billy Strotter. What's up, Billy?
Oh, well, it's good to see you as always, Calvin. I am Billy Strutter Jr., and I am a Black man in America.
Okay.
I guess we'll say that instead of African-American.
That's cool.
There we go.
That works.
I like that.
And then last but not least, we have Nikki Pardo with us. Hi, Nikki.
Hey, Calvin. It's great to be back. I'm Nikki Pardo, and I'm grateful to be here.
Okay. All right. Well, so... That being the case, we'll go ahead and just dive headlong into questions. Everybody on this podcast, for those of you who are listening, everybody on this podcast is in some way, shape, or form in an interracial relationship or the product of an interracial relationship with the exception of Kent.
There we go.
With the exception of Kent. He's giving me this look like, wait a minute.
I'm white. My parents were white. Four grandparents were white.
It happens.
And that goes back a long way.
It seems to be the case.
We're sorry.
We're Michigan, right. So just kind of go around the table, and what was your first experience in or witnessing an interracial relationship? What was it like when you saw, you can either talk about the first time you got into an interracial relationship or the first time that you saw an interracial relationship or intercultural relationship?
So I was in kindergarten. And there was this Mexican girl. I don't know, she probably was Cuban. But I don't know. I was in Miami, and I was in love. And she was my girlfriend.
Probably Cuban.
She was Cuban.
Yeah, probably.
And we took our swimming classes together.
Okay.
So that was my first experience. But growing up in Miami, everybody's something. Mm-hmm. They're not. And the funny thing is nobody wants to be American. And a lot of people don't know that. So even if you were like a Black American... You might have been like, I'm Bahamian, or I'm something else, I'm Jamaican, and then you grow dreads. So I think that was my very first.
Okay. Who else?
Yeah, for me it was pretty young, too. I grew up in Canada.
Okay.
And my church.
Also known as America's Hat.
Right.
Yes.
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 And at where we went to church, there was a couple where there was a Canadian, a European, actually, who was married to a Korean.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I was always exposed to multiculturalism and diversity, and being an Asian myself coming into Canada, I interacted with it and saw it all the time.
Okay. How about this side of the table?
We're just going to look at each other until somebody has to say something because it's a podcast and we're not recording.
Right.
You know, so I guess I would imagine it, when I'm thinking about my first experience, it would have been in high school. I ended up dating someone, but finding out really quick that just because you were dating someone in that relationship doesn't mean that they can always take you home to meet their parents. But I think we're getting into that.
Yeah, later. We're going to get into that.
All right.
We'll get into that.
I grew up with it. I have, my family is from Canada as well, and just the intermingling, everyone is mixed, white and black specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And I'm going to jump in, and I don't mean this to be funny. This is actually, because I'm 41 years old, my first experience with a interracial couple was when I was probably 4 or 5, and I was watching The Jeffersons. And there was an interracial couple, the next door neighbors, the Jeffersons' neighbors. She was black, he was white, and that was, even at 5, I knew that's outside my experience. And that stuck out to me even 36 years later.
Okay. Sure.
It's crazy. I didn't even think about that.
I never thought about that
the
either.
Jeffersons?
That was our introduction. Well, I'm around the same age. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So... So then everybody here again is now has entered into a multicultural, interracial relationship. As you answer, explain, you know, what kind of relationship you're in, you know, what kind of what the other person is, I guess, for lack of a better term. We're all humans, obviously. What are some, but as we answer this next question, though, what are some practical issues facing people in interracial relationships?
The looks.
What do you mean by that?
Like with my husband, and I don't know what's happening. Like the past couple of times we've been in Greektown. I mean, I'm not bashing Greektown at all, you know, for establishments or, you know, whatever. But the first time a black guy, I'm sorry, let me back up. So I'm black and my husband is Mexican and Cuban. So we're walking through, and he swears that some guy grimed him or looked at him funny. And, you know, first he looked at me, and then he looked at him and, you know, kind of just gave a look like whatever. And then the second time is most recently, we were down there this weekend, and we're walking, and it was a black couple, and she says to me, sell out. And I'm like, what, and by the time it really registered, like for my, it didn't catch up, you know, with my ear, my what I was hearing, and then I turned around, and so she was gone. So my husband was like, just let it go. So it's just like recently, unless we just haven't been paying attention to it, and just maybe oblivious to it. I don't know. So the answer to your question is just the looks and the comment, where I'm just going to isolate it, so you know it's not like it's ongoing. But okay. Yeah.
Anybody else? Everybody else.
Yes.
Everybody else. Hannah, I'm going to pick you. This is like elementary school now. Like, if nobody's going to raise their hand, you're just going to get picked.
If you don't look at him, he won't call him.
Right, exactly. I tried that. It didn't work. So, no, I quite honestly, as I was thinking about this, I don't really, maybe I'm not paying attention. Because I'm pretty confident and very comfortable in who I am and in the relationship. Oh, let me back up. I'm sorry. I'm married to a white man.
All right.
His no, he's Scottish Irish.
Appears to be from the state of Alabama. From the way you.
All right. Not all white people are from Alabama, Hannah.
Oh,
racist.
Really? So I know. Racist. Problems. I have problems. No, so he's Scottish Irish And he's very tall, and so yeah, I think we might get looks every once in a while, but I don't really pay attention, and it doesn't really. Okay, yesterday, just as recently, now that I'm thinking about it, just yesterday we were out on our boat on Upper Long Lake with just a bunch of friends, and we have some friends who have a couple of black kids that they're bringing into their home, and we're all hanging out, and the ages are the same as my kids' ages, so we're all just playing, and these two people. were just next to us. Our boats were docked, and they literally were just standing there staring at us. And I'm looking at her, and I was like, hey, I waved. I'm like, what's up? How are you? Thinking, okay. And then it just didn't stop. It was really, it was quite bizarre. And at first I was like, what is going on? You know, I just shocked. I was really shocked for me because I don't really, I don't get looked at like that. At least I don't realize it. But yesterday, I really felt it.
Hmm. It was like the scene from Django when Django came in on that horse.
And everybody just stopped.
They probably never seen black people on a boat before.
So. Like black kids and black all these white, this white couple and then a baby and then these Asians. I think it was really confusing.
United Nations.
Yeah, what is happening on that boat over there? Are they refugees? Are
I think it was really confusing to people.
Yeah, it was
interesting. That really stood out to me.
Okay. It's good to have these kind of conversations because it creates situations where people can say, no, my husband and I, we don't get looks. Well, there was yesterday.
I know. Well, and I think part of it was because of who we had on the who we were all with. I mean, if it was just my husband and I walking, you know, at the mall or in the streets, we don't really get. I don't feel that or experience that in my everyday, you know.
I would say it depends, too, on what part of the country or what part of the city.
Yeah.
Or, right? So, I mean, even within a certain city, depending on what part of the city you are, depends on what sort of experience that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. I know when, this story has me in a white tuxedo in the South standing in a wedding, but I don't think the white tuxedo part is important. But certainly the fact that my wife and I were down in the deep South, we're in Georgia, where one tends to wear a white tuxedo for a wedding, apparently. And, you know, we're just sitting down for in the diner. And my wife, who loves to cook grits and bacon and eggs, she's just all over it. And, oh, we all do this. Let me back up. Who's primarily Swedish on her side of the family. But, you know, just realizing how it didn't matter whether people were black or white, they both stared. What are you guys doing here?
Right.
I mean, and we were, you know, we're a couple hours south of Atlanta.
Okay.
But certainly, if we're, say, in Warren, that may be a different experience than if we're walking around in Detroit.
Okay. So I think mine's a little bit different because I look black. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look like an African-American male. My wife is African-American. But I think we don't get dirty looks. I mean, most people think that my wife is from another country just as I'm from another country if they know us. I think our issue comes in when we start having conversations with other groups. Like, we have a lot of friends, and mm-hmm. I grew up in a Haitian home. If you don't know what that means, like, there was no cable. There wasn't a lot of things that the average kid would have. So a lot of things I wasn't exposed to. Yeah. And so it's like when they're having a conversation or a joke, my wife is like, oh, excuse me, I got to explain to my husband what's going on. Because I don't know what they're talking about.
Right, so that cross-cultural.
Yeah, so I get that a lot. And they're like looking at me like, I thought he was. And then she explains, oh, no, he's Haitian. But he was born here, but he's not here. He wasn't here.
That happened to me one time. I was at a party, and everybody was Cuban except for me. And apparently, I didn't know that Puerto Rican. Everybody's Puerto Rican, and there's like sliding scale for color in Puerto Rico. And you can be like white Puerto Rican, and you can be black as I am Puerto Rican. And everybody there, when they get excited, you know, that I'm there, he's a guy, doesn't know Spanish, we're just going to talk in English, okay, cool. But then they get excited, and they kick over to Spanish. And my friend said, hey, you need to say, es verdad, which means it's true. When they start laughing, getting excited, then they'll be like, oh, yeah, huh? You know, he doesn't really know Spanish. He's just saying that to get us back on track. Well, this black guy walks in and comes to the door, and I'm like, oh, finally. Finally, there's someone here, and he just kicks into Spanish. I was like, oh, come on. Come on. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of that's interesting that you put that out there. It's like, hey, the cultural misunderstandings. Like, here I am thinking, again, people look at you, they think you're both black, right?
Right.
Or they think that you're both from somewhere else.
So. Right. Sometimes I just wait till we get in the car, and then she explains
something.
Yeah, so I just
Wow. That's cool. Well, what about the cultural challenges, like as you're blending a family or getting, you know, what are you going to have for dinner tonight? Or, you know, how are you going to raise children? So, there are certainly some cultural differences there. And, you know, so, you know, please feel free to jump in. I'm kind of losing steam.
No, it's great. It's great. And if anything, you're gaining steam and get into a really hot topic. And it is about raising a biracial child. And the fact that my husband and I are very, very cautious. In fact, until last year, he's now 12, from kindergarten, I took him all the way down to Most Holy Trinity, which is half an hour from our house, one way, so he would have the diversity and he would know about his culture. Because one time, because I'm in a black sorority, I belong to all these different black organizations, and he said one time, he was about 6 or 7, like, "Mom, why is everything so black? And at first I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "You know, your friends and all this stuff." And I'm like, "Wow, I didn't even think about, you know." And I said, "But well, you're getting it at your school." He said, "Yeah, but that's really it." So that's when there was kind of a shift, or it made me realize. And so we even had the conversation recently where I'm like, "How do you feel? Like, do you feel more, you know, Latino? You feel more black? Like, what?" He said he feels straight down the middle. So I kind of exhaled, like, okay. So I feel like I might have kind of struck the balance we have.
Okay.
And then I come from a very, very Mexican Cuban family. They party for everything. There are 1,000 of them. And I know it sounds so stereotypical, even from the diversity person. But yeah, he's the 23rd grandchild. So, I mean, they're very close. So he's getting both sides.
I don't know. I don't picture Mexicans or Cubans as having fun at all. they're usually very
group.
Dour. So, right. Keep it inside.
So soft-spoken.
Right,
so soft-spoken.
Right.
Billy, I mean, you asked the question. How about you engage the question as well for a second there?
Well, you know, the thing that was interesting for our daughter.
How old's your daughter?
She's 15 now.
She's 15, okay.
Yeah, so
I remember. My daughter's about to turn 14, so.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's a fun age.
It goes fast.
That's a fun age.
Yeah.
And by fun, I mean not.
Please. I mean, you know, there are people when they ask the question, how old is your child? And you say 15, and like, boy or girl, and you say girl, and they're like, "I'm sorry, I'm praying for you."
Yeah. She'll be cool when she's 19.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll come back. She'll like you once again. but, you know, there was only one time that I remember her having a conversation about coming home from school and someone saying, "Well, what are you?" You know, and having that conversation with her. But she's always been, I don't want to choose. I feel like I should not have to choose one box, or I should be able to choose both. And, you know, and appreciate both cultures. Okay. But if we're talking about raising a child, certainly there was a different way in which I was raised, you know, with two black parents and her having two parents that were white. So, I mean, one of the things that we had to work out was that, you know, sometimes it's not, you know, just sitting and talking through things. Sometimes you just tell the child what to do just from, you know, the way that I was raised. Child, don't you ever, you know, you guys.
Yep, that's so true.
Yeah, so finding that balance was interesting of two parenting styles.
Okay. How about you, Hannah?
I think that my husband and I had to do a lot of communicating because of the way I was raised and disciplined. It's very different from the way he was raised and disciplined. So we had to walk through, okay, we're going to spank. What does that mean? And I was kind of scared to spank because when I was spanked as a child, it was pretty severe. And I was like, well, what's the lines? And how, you know, how do you define that? And so we had to talk through a lot of that stuff. You know, how do you, how much, you know, schooling, what are we focusing on? What are our goals for our kids, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, here I am at when my first son, I have three children, by the way. I have a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, and a 5-year-old. Two boys, and then the youngest is a girl. And when my first son was 18 months old, I was starting to research, and I had a whole list. I was interviewing and talking to all these different academic environments, you know, and Chris just sat me down and was like, "Babe, what is our goal for our kids?" You know, it kind of brought me back from the clouds and was like, okay, let's focus on this. Because for us, we're Christians, and we believe in raising our children biblically. And so that brings, culture. It doesn't have cultural lines necessarily, right? And so it's, okay, what do we think our goals are for our children? We had to really focus on that aspect and then see what do we need to do to get them there. Which and a really lot of it is so that we raise them with a biblical worldview, raise them with understanding, you know, who they are, whose they are, and what their purposes or what their gifts and talents are.
Okay.
And how we can nurture those things and what kind of discipline does the Bible teach and breaking that down. And so that was one thing that really focused, kept us on common ground. And, you know, I sort of realized the what was really important versus, you know.
Yeah, I'm finding it kind of interesting. I mean, last couple weeks ago, we had our first episode and we talked about what's one of the biggest issues facing the world today. And I said it was a worldview issue. How do you see the
Absolutely.
World? What, through what lens? And what I think you're bringing out here, just my listening to you, I'm almost getting the sense, actually, from all of you, like once you're in a relationship, there could be some cultural things to deal with, but you're really dealing with things as a parent. Like, do we spank? Do we not spank? And I don't know if that's like a black white. That's not a black white issue. That's not a, you know, Asian white issue or Hispanic and black issue. I mean, it's just like, how are we going to raise our kids? How are we going to do this? Now, obviously, we're going to get into the nitty gritty here in a few minutes of how there are some issues that are going to, you know, be prevalent for children and just our own marriages and things like that. But I liked how it's just kind of like, hey, we're husband and wife thinking about our kids. What are the goals for our kids? And I also like how, you know, your faith plays into that as well. Gregoire, your son's one at this point, so I'm not sure how far along you are in the conversations, I'm sure there must be some.
Yeah. Are you a tiger mom or are you a lion mom?
Define those?
Because I'm like, what?
Oh, exactly.
Everyone has a little different definitions, though. So yeah. I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you mean by.
Well, I read that book a long time ago, and I don't remember it, but I know the tiger moms are like the tough ones that you're gonna live your life like this. If this is what, and then I think a lion mom is more like, all right, what do you want to do? And then when you figure it out, then you're gonna live it like that. Like, so I was just wondering.
I'm in the phase right now where we're just figuring out who we are in Christ. I mean, we're exploring stuff together.
Okay.
I don't know what I am.
I'm a tiger mom.
Yeah.
And my friends have me in boot camp because it's really bad. Where I'm like setting this blueprint.
But why the question?
Well, she's Korean. My mother's Haitian, and you sound just like my mother. Like that was.
I was like, where are you going with this? That's the leading question, obviously, right?
Yeah. My mother's a tiger mom.
Okay.
My wife is going to be a lion mom. Like, okay. She's a punk. Like, whatever he does, she just, she melts. My son is 11 months, but he's the size of a 3-year-old.
So, oh, wow.
So he's a big guy and with a lot of hair. And so that's because of me. My wife is African-American, but my son is going to grow up as an American. He's going to grow up as a black kid in America. And when we first got married, and I got emotional about it, I was like, I don't want my son to grow up and then say, yeah, my name is Gregoire, and my dad's Haitian. And so from day one, everything that we do in both. If there's something in English, we get the same thing in French or in Creole. My parents don't, they only speak Creole to my son. So I'm very prideful, and I'm proud of who I am and where I'm from. And I want my son to be proud of who he is and where he's from. And so I think mine's a little bit different because he's going to be grouped in as a black American. But he needs to let people know, like I let people know, that I'm Haitian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's swing this over to you, Billy, real quick. Next two questions I definitely want to hit on. And then, Kent, if there's any questions that you're wanting to ask. Black men who date outside of their race. Do you feel like... Okay, are black men who date outside of their race turning their back on their culture in any way? Why or why not? That's a straight-up interview question for... And I don't know if this pertains to anybody else. Because I hear this one mostly about black men dating white women or black men dating anyone that's not black. You're betraying your race. You're a sellout. You owe something to black women. And you are not giving that to, and you owe something to the black community, and you're not giving that. So, do you ever feel that I mean, you're not going to go divorce your wife and leave your kids and things like that, but do you ever feel like that's a possibility or that there's anything to that indictment?
So really, for me, it's a difficult question to answer, and for lots of reasons. What I'll do is point out, I was raised in a community, a small community of about 50, 60,000 people, 99% white. And so for me, growing up, my friends, the people that were at our church, everyone that I spent my time did not look like me. My parents worked really hard to make sure that we were, as a family, we got together with other black families in the community, but we weren't together on a daily basis. So for me, when it came time to, choosing who I was my ideal mate, it never felt like I was abandoning anything, because that was, again, it comes down to, this is all I've known my mm-hmm. entire life.
Okay.
Right. So I think someone that grows up differently than me may have a different perspective on that.
Okay.
So it's so funny that you asked him that question, but you ain't say it to me. But
I think
it's a little
racist
in here.
No, yeah. And here's why. I think it's because there's the visual.
Right.
And again, you've even said it, so I'm sorry if I played into that. But please answer what I mean. I wouldn't have thought to ask you the question.
Exactly.
So,
and what's so funny about it is that when we see a dark Indian man who happens to have black skin and he's with a white woman, we don't never say, why is he not with an Indian woman? Or when we see a dark Mexican or Latino person, we don't never say, oh, why is he not with his own race?
Well, I lived in Southwest Detroit, and there was some looks if you saw I'll say specifically Mexican, because it's predominantly Mexican, man with a white woman, and it would say, wow, so there is that kind of sellout, like I said, I'm just exclusively speaking about, Southwest Detroit.
Yeah, so then it goes back to what you were saying earlier, what Billy was saying earlier, it can depend on where you are.
Right.
Right. So mm-hmm. I would never have thought to ask you the question, but somewhere else someone might think to ask you the question. If I saw a Mexican guy with a white woman, I wouldn't think sellout, but in Mexican town,
right,
that might be seen as a sellout, right? And so,
I want to just touch on that. So my son is 12 years old, and he's starting to date and everything, and we've had the conversation, and I'm like, look, try to bring home someone of color. Now, this is just me being honest. I said, we come in all the spectrums, from me to a friend of mine who's dark-skinned. I said, Auntie Sharita. So he said, okay. But kind of like, you're a hypocrite because you married dad. And it blew me away because I'm like, but I see us both of color. And so he just was like, wait, no, that's hypocrisy in its purest form. And I caught myself. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I said, okay, you're right. So fast forward, he started dating this girl from Italy, straight from Italy. Her father's here working with one of the big three. And so he asked me, is it okay to like her? And I'm like, oh, I created this monster. And I said, of course. And, I just felt so bad. I'm like, so we had the other conversation. Like, you know what, Vincent, you can just, I don't care who you fall in love with. Just make sure that they're nice to you. And, I'm like, oh, I caught myself. But, I mean, that's what my mother told me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really.
No, the funny thing, I had the reverse. Mm-hmm. I'm Haitian, I'm black, and I'm a Latter-day Saint. So by the time I got 26, my parents were like, well, you're not married yet. Like, everything okay? It's like, these black girls are not working out, so maybe you should try to start dating some white girls or something. Like, maybe you should try to date another race of girls. Like, they were trying to hook me up with girls that were going to... I live in Detroit. She lives in Grand Rapids, and she was, like, Hispanic from South America. Like, they were, like, trying to... it's like, maybe you shouldn't date black girls. It's not working out. You're not married yet. Like, what's wrong? So...
Interesting.
So my parents are like, once they got to America, they was like, well, you're an American. Mm-hmm. We're in America. Everybody's American. So you should date everybody. And I've dated other races other than black people and Haitian people. I should never date a Haitian girl, but there's no Haitian girls up here that I know of.
Right. Yeah, there's not many Haitian Mormons either. So.
Right, we were talking about the stars.
Actually, there are, but they just don't live in Detroit.
They don't live in Detroit. Okay.
Yeah, my husband was the first person I dated outside of my race. Okay. I was always partial. Like, if you were not, you know, dark skin, you got no kickums from
no,
me.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
So then another thing that's connected to interracial dating in a lot of people's minds, or maybe not necessarily cognitively, but subconsciously, is this idea of fetishism. With black men, it's, oh, you know, speaking of a white woman interested in a black man, it presents something exotic and strange and dangerous, and it's kind of a historical holdover from slave days of the slave master's wife running out to the barn and having sex with, you know, one of the slave hands, which was always a big no-no. The slave master could go and do that, but the slave master's wife could not. So there's kind of this idea of fetishism that holds over in today. Like, I'll talk to a lot of white women who are interested in black men, and, oh, it's just so exotic. I'm like, that dude lives right down the street from you. There's nothing exotic about him at all. But then, so Hannah, you're Korean, and I know that there is a history of Asian women specifically being fetishized. So do you think, how do I word this? White men who date Asian women, you're married to a white man. Has he ever been accused of any kind of fetishism, or have you ever had that question? Because I know it's a thing, but I don't know if you deal with it personally in your guys' lives.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It's never come up at all anywhere.
But have you heard that, though?
No.
No,
I mean, heard that meaning like between my husband and I? Somebody
just in general.
No, I've definitely heard it. Okay. I've been approached.
Okay. Like, we need to move to her neighborhood.
Okay.
They're living a life over there.
There's no racism at all, right?
Absolutely. I've seen it. I felt it. I've been approached. Black men, white men, every kind, anywhere, all the time.
Okay.
Why does that just growing boil up my blood? I don't know why.
Yeah.
That's just, here, just like...
Because when you think about it, we've lost, or what's lacking in that is the value of human life.
Yeah.
Maybe that's right? What it is. It's diminishing it's being a woman.
Right. And really, it isn't just Asian women or black men. I mean,
black women. What,
it's black women. It's white women. It's any woman. And it's really, I think the issue goes so much further beyond just fetishism. I think it becomes that because of the lack of value for human life and the lack of, I truly believe, we are human beings that are created in the image of Christ. We aren't created in an image that is royal and that is intrinsically something extremely valuable. And so, but whatever people's belief systems are, whatever that is, human beings intrinsically really should be valuable because it's life. But we lack, I think there's such a lack of that, and it's been going on for a very long time. And it translates differently today than it did, you know, many years ago. But it's such an issue that I'm seeing, and that as even raising my kids, that we battle with constantly. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of that, and I look back and remember, like, I've been approached a lot, actually. And it does it from, I mean, every color, every kind.
Wow.
You know, I have at points, like, in going out with some of my girlfriends, just pretended I was gay with her. Like we were just, let's go out together. I'm going to hold your hand because I don't want to be hit on or approached.
That is really interesting.
So you know,
well, we're on a podcast. She's very beautiful, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So
let's
stop.
So, I think it's my haircut. So I don't know something, but
no,
it's just,
you know what? Sitting here listening to you, I know the origin because back when I lived in Southwest, my landlord used to bring in these mail order brides. She had two. When I moved in, he was getting rid of one. I don't know what happened there. And so he went to the Philippines and came back with another one. And he used to just torture her. So they lived under me. We were in a flat. And it was just horrific, the things that he would do to her. And you could just hear her screaming. And so I think maybe that's the origin. And why? Because it's just, like I said, it just boils my blood that, you know. And like, you wouldn't do this to...
Right.
Right. Anybody else? But you think of trafficking, though. You think of, you know, all of these different things that are happening where we really, truly lack the true value of human life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just the core of so many of the issues that we see today.
Now, the interesting thing is we talked about kids a little bit earlier, and it's kind of a weird segue, but it's slightly connected. Because there was a point when biracial kids... were considered abominations. You were an abomination, right? You know, there was the one drop rule. Like, if you had a drop of, you know, so quote unquote nigger blood in you, you were 100% black. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were seen as an abomination, not valued, no human worth, basically cattle, right? And now, then we didn't even value children, but now we value children. And it's gone the total reverse, where I almost feel like, for lack of a better word, I almost feel like biracial children are fetishized in people's minds. Oh, black, mixed kids are the best. They're just beautiful.
Well,
I've never seen.
To be fair, they are.
Right.
They look great. They're smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, of course.
And they should be in charge.
So here's the thing. There are some ugly biracial kids. There are ugly normal kids. They're not normal kids.
I understand that's your experience, and I'm going to take your word for it.
I'm not talking about my kid.
Of course not yours.
But I have seen some really ugly biracial kids.
But you know, I think it's the media. I really think it's the media. Where they've just made these biracial mixed kids, whatever you want to call them, they've just made them, you know, the elite.
And Obama's pretty classy. Obama's pretty classy.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because in the past, you know, like the whole war on drugs things in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, most 80s babies are not on crack. So it probably was an issue. And then they promoted this propaganda. And now we probably see it that way. I don't see it that way. I was one of those people who's like, I'm not marrying a light-skinned woman, because that seems to be like everybody wants to do that. Like,
everybody
in Detroit wanted to, you know, you live in a city, you'll go find your light-skinned girl that live in Southfield and live the American dream and live in Oak Park or something like that.
And that's why I didn't date light-skinned men, for that very same reason.
Exactly. So I found the most chocolate.
That's really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that was
100%.
That was the norm. Like, you see a black, dark-skinned dude with a light-skinned woman, and they go have some kids and live in the suburbs. So, me, I'm like, I'm going to have a beautiful chocolate woman. I mostly dated beautiful chocolate women. Not mostly. All the women I dated that were chocolate were beautiful. And now I have a beautiful chocolate son. And, you know, that is something that, you know, you got to be, like, why are you not proud of who you are? But in reverse, like... I don't care. Like, if I see two people in love, they're just in love. Like, it doesn't even matter.
Which I think that,
and that I understand what you were saying. I'm sorry. Earlier, she was speaking that we're all, you know, we're heirs and joint heirs. She's speaking of Romans chapter 8. I can't remember the verse, but like, that it's true. We're all children of our Heavenly Father, and we're all created in His image. We're just people.
I think that leads to Kent. I know you and I were talking offline.
Yeah,
I had a question that you wanted to ask.
Well, if a person has an attraction to a certain type, like a black woman who likes white skin or blonde hair, or a white guy who likes Asian features, or a black man who likes Hispanic culture and language, Latino culture, is that a racist approach to dating? What's the line between that and having a type?
I think it's just preference. I think it's preference. Entitled to that.
Yeah, and
I touched on that earlier. It depends on where you grew up.
That's true.
Right? So your surroundings are going to have some sort of bearing on the type of person that you're attracted to, as well as your home life, right? I mean, so the interesting thing, we were talking offline before the show, Calvin, about, you know, certainly I married, you know, most people end up marrying someone that has... They say marry someone like their mom or like their dad. But while my wife is not black, she very much is in personality is exactly like my mother.
Oh, I love it.
Right, so, go ahead.
No, and then I was going to say, like, for me, I definitely could have found a, let's say, a white woman or a Latino woman that was like my mother, but I think it'd be hard for me to do it because, like, I've been scrutinized my whole life for being a black man in America or and then being a minority on top of that, like another minor on top of, you know, being Haitian and black. Because so it's like you're black, but you don't really fit in with us because you're different. But then I have a features of an American person. I don't know why. Maybe because I was born in the United States. But I don't look. I look like my mother, but I don't look like my dad. And like my dad has, my stepdad has a Haitian face. Like, you know, you know he's Haitian.
Right.
And so it's like when the Haitian, I went to my grandmother's funeral, and I was sitting in the front row before the funeral happened, and these Haitian guys walked up to me like, "Who are you? Like, why are you here?" Like, because they thought I was some American dude just coming, and they were just so thrown off because I looked so different. And so it's like I don't even kind of fit in with them, you know. Wow. So it's like it would have been even. I think it would have been difficult for me to marry somebody that was white, even if I would have met somebody and I would have fell in love because. Like, I even today, my wife says, like, I'm like, do you see how they look at us? And then just being young and black, like, and like, you know, both my wife and I, we're educated. You know, we have a certain prestigiousness of ourselves that we feel like. And people see that. And then they it's like we had to get validated to be a part of a group.
Right.
And it's like, you know, people walk up to her and say, you're not like them. People walk up to me and say, you're not like
that's
them.
That's a whole other conversation. So, yeah, we did talk about that.
Yeah. So here's a question that I didn't send you guys, but this is almost like devil's advocate. And I feel almost racist even asking it because...
Let that instinct be your guide.
Yeah, let that... No, I mean, I feel it, but I know that it's not, and you'll get it when I ask the question.
Okay.
So I feel like Hispanic, Latino culture is just vibrant. I went to a party with my Puerto Rican friends, and I was just like, oh, my God, I was so alive. This is just amazing. It's not like my culture. But I also believe that African-American culture, very vibrant. I lived in Japan for 4 years. Something beautiful about that culture. I imagine that there's something beautiful about, you know, Korean culture and German culture and Irish culture. And so there's all these beautiful things about all these cultures. And then we have people who are intermarrying, right? And so then... is there a loss of that culture? And the reason I hesitate asking the question is because you hear white people like, you know, maintain the white race. Don't dilute our pure blood. Yeah, don't dilute our pure blood, right? Don't taint things. But the question I have is just a more honest one of, do we lose something in translation in terms of the beauty of these cultures by intermarrying? Is there any loss at all?
Have you ever had... Mediterranean Cuban fusion food?
Like, no, on. I have not. Okay,
like,
so
it makes the world better.
So it makes it more vibrant, is what you're saying. Yeah. All right.
In 1999, the People magazine had an article, and it always stuck out to me, that said about 2020, there is not going to be one race. Everybody's going to have
2050. The census came out with that.
Everybody's going to be mixed at that point.
Yeah, yeah. By the year 2050, there will be no majority, and the white race is going to drop down to 49%.
Yeah.
So, and they're saying that's from immigration, globalization, and all the other Asians.
Right.
What jumps out to me is that you can quote People magazine articles from 17 years ago.
It stuck out of my, like, when I saw it, it was a black kid and a white kid on the cover, and it just always stuck to me because, I mean, I don't know why. It just did. And
you know what? Speaking of magazines, I was just telling the story recently that I went to, for kindergarten, first grade, Detroit Country Day. And this was back in the 70s. And it was horrific. The story, I mean, the prejudice, it was just awful. And I remember telling my dad, please, you walk me into school. I don't want mom to take me in anymore. You know, because I just get teased and, you know, and the kids won't play with me and all this stuff. And so my father used to say, don't worry, one day the whole world will look like you. But at 5 years old,
right,
and 7 years old, I didn't care. I just wanted it to go away, and I wanted it remedied immediately. So I remember, speaking of magazines, I might have been in undergrad or something, and he had a magazine. It was Newsweek or Time or something, and it said about how the world is blending, and there was a biracial or multiracial woman on the cover. And he saved it for me. He said, look at this. And I remember just, like, tears just coming down my face. And I'm like, wow. He said, I told you. He said, and it's not done. It's still, you know, the world is just, you know, the mixing and all of that. He said, and he unfortunately passed 5 years ago. So, you know, I just think back, like, he saw the vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
That's beautiful.
It's coming to fruition.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to follow that rabbit down the rabbit hole. I would love. We're gonna do a podcast episode at some point on the perspectives of biracial kids. I would love to have that particular, you know, adult biracial kids, right? You know, now we've grown up, this is what it was like. I'd love to have that particular conversation. But we're all out of time on this one. So thank all of you guys and guys and girls for coming out and sharing your background, sharing your heart, sharing your faith. I think it's all important. I think those are important things that make all of us who we are. So thank you guys so much for coming out and being a part.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's more than this music, it's more than this music than money and women.